Hey, hey, everybody, and welcome to the Camera Life Podcast. This is the Random Photography Show. It is Monday, the 25th of August. Can you believe that? August is just coming gone. Episode 110 of the Camera Life Podcast, proudly brought to you by Lucky Straps. Head to luckystraps.com if you're looking... Oh, I forgot to press pause. See, I knew I'd screw it up eventually. I always mess up the audio.
I was trying to do the volume for you, Greg.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Good on you, mate. But yes, here we are, yet another episode, episode 110.
Pretty cool. Oh, yeah, flying through.
I hope everyone watching or listening along is fine and well. We've got a lot to get through tonight, and of course we couldn't do that without a little bit of help from my friends. Here we've got Jim, and we've got Sam Olson. G'day, guys.
Hey.
Hey, love the enthusiasm. Where's the fucking energy? Yeah. Seriously.
We jinxed each other.
You did. I'm yet to get the music right on a podcast without Justin. I'm going to hear about it in my performance review. I can just feel it. Anyway.
Just if you don't have the Rodecaster, that's the...
Yeah.
You know.
I know. I get it.
You can throw some cash around and get another one.
Yeah, sure. I'll just, just extend the mortgage. Good to have you here, Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
Or as always, full of wisdom, clearly. And Sam. Great to have you back.
Awesome to be back. I'm great.
That's good.
It's nice that it's not freezing in Sydney either. I see that Paul says it's not freezing in Canberra either.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we'll get to the chat soon. There's certainly been a shift in the weather. It's even a little warmer here in Melbourne, if you can believe that. Crazy. And we do have a What's in the Box segment a little bit later in the show towards the end, and I do have a parcel here, and I think Sam Olson knows exactly what's inside that box, but we will reveal that a little bit later. But first, Jim, you want to say good evening to some people?
Yeah, let's do it. We've got Philip Johnson in the chat. G'day, Philip.
Hey, Philip.
Lisa Leach, good evening from WA, and hello to Neil, watching from home in Victoria. And then Neil says,
what are you doing in Lisa? WA, Lisa? What's going on there?
Get off my digital lawn. I think they're missing Justin, so they've decided to be late in honor of him. Tony, when you commented this, we were already live. So speed up.
Get your act together, Tony.
We've got Nick Fletcher. Holla, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
We've got Rick Nelson. Hello, everyone. Neil Leach. Hello, evening, all. Paul. Hello from Canberra. Not below zero for a change. It's also pretty nice here, too, in Bendigo. So
yeah, we had a couple of good days, hey?
Rick says, Nick, you don't need to get the music right, Greg. You shoot Fuji, so all is forgiven.
There you go. There it is.
We probably shouldn't have brought that comment up.
Whatever. Whatever. All right, so like I said, thanks, Jim. G'day, everybody. Thanks for joining us. If you're new to the Camera Life podcast, if you're watching for the first time or you've watched a couple of times and think you'd like to hang around for more in the future, please give us a like. It helps YouTube know that we want to share the love, and make sure you subscribe and tickle the bell icon, and that way you'll get notified of every upcoming episode in your time zone, which makes it all so much easier. So like I said, we've got a bit to get through today. There's a huge amount of news. Most of it's fluff, but there is still some news. We've got Sam here. Sam's got some recent images to share with us, so we're going to go through those. A couple of book-related discussions this evening too, and what else? I think that's about it for now. I'm not going to go over YouTube. No, we'll look at images. I've got some of Sam's images. It's a bad word. And I've got mine. I don't know if you don't have any images to share at the moment, Jim.
No, not this week. No, all I've been working on something else.
You can't have all the glory, can you?
No,
I'll leave it to some of our lesser people. I.e. me. I am only a Fujifilm shooter after all.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Well, what do you reckon before we get anything else, I want to hear an update from Sam. Sam, what's been going on in your world? Where's the book at? Where are you at? What are you up to?
So the book was published just over a month ago, and I received my first air shipment a couple of weeks ago, and that air shipment's already sold out.
Wow.
And the shipment that's coming by sea should arrive mid-September.
That's great.
Just in time for the book tour. So I've been doing lots of organizing things with a publisher and speaking to a lot of camera clubs, some around Sydney in person and a stack via Zoom, which are more country, Queensland, Victoria and Tassie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you've been, that's been awesome. Busy.
So yeah. Are you busy watching the live ship finder to see where the books are in the world floating around?
I have absolutely no vision of where they are, actually. I had to contact my publisher, and because of Trump's tariffs, it caused a delay of 1 week or something like that because rerouted shipping, whatever.
Yeah, it's a mess.
But, yeah, it's a mess.
And that's great news. Congratulations. Yeah. The book is out there. People are interested. People are buying it. Do you want to just give us a quick rundown for those that may not have seen your last appearance with us, or maybe it was the one before? You've been here a couple of times. Just give us a rundown of what the book is and what it's about.
So the first section is a how-to, particularly seascapes and landscapes, aerial photography, panoramas, a tiny bit on Milky Ways, all the things that you need to get great images along the Great Ocean Road. So all the skill sets plus some of the basic foundation work. And then we touch on weather and tides and what equipment you need, those sort of things are all in the first section of the book. And then the last two thirds are all 152 different shoot locations around along the Great Ocean Road or Otways region with everything you need as a photographer to go and do the shoot, from what equipment to bring to what to wear to what time of day is best, what direction are you facing for the primary shoot direction. All of that sort of stuff is all in there.
Even how many steps.
Yep. How many stairs that you've got to go up and down, because as someone who has dodgy knees.
These are important, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just figured that there's also a lot of photographers that don't get to get out into doing a lot of this stuff until they're in their retirement years. To those guys particularly, a lot of them don't have great knees or great backs. So how many steps they've got to climb or descend is actually sometimes really important for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's about making sure that you make safe plans, that you're achieving stuff that, or you're tackling stuff that you know you can handle. Because you don't want to get to the top of a location and then realize that, you know, it's twice as long on the way down. I don't know what I'm saying, but you know what I mean.
But I will say, just to bring it to Fuji, I did say that...
There it is, Jim. $1.20. Yeah. Go on, Sam.
I'm a Nikon shooter and I love shooting Nikon, but as a full frame.
We all make mistakes, Sam.
It's not a mistake, but it is freaking heavy. The gear is heavy. And so I would say there is definitely advantages as you get more injuries to carrying a much, much lighter pack than I currently drag around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're announcing live on air your switch to Fujifilm. Is that what this is about?
Oh, hell no. Hell no. I might consider it when I'm 80.
All right. Well, I'll get back to you then. It is interesting, and we'll cover this in one of the news sections about gear. It seems that, you know, a lot of brands, like Nikon has just announced the new 24-70, the Mark II, the 2.8.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, was it, or Friday they dropped that?
Yeah,
it had been, I think we'd reported the rumor last week maybe, but it is real, and that offers a bit of a weight saving over the original.
Yeah,
the Fujifilm, it's like one of their red badge, I think it's 16 to 55 or 16 to 50, the f2.8 constant aperture, that had a refresh, a Mark II, and again it dropped a lot of weight. especially on the front end of the lens. It stopped the lens being so front heavy. And we're seeing more and more of this brands kind of re-engineering classics, favorites, you know, really punchy lenses, and dropping the weight constantly every time that they can. So, which is good to see. I mean, I used to shoot Canon DSLR, and I used to have a lot of L-series glass, and it was all so big and heavy, you know, and that's part of the reason why I switched to Fujifilm, because I had to have something lighter. It was just ruining me, and it was ruining my joy of photography. So it's a fair point to bring up, Sam.
I mean, I thought I would, while I was at that creators conference a month ago with Justin, I thought I'd try out the Nikon ZF.
Oh yeah.
Just to see how it felt. I'd heard it didn't feel great in the hand.
Yeah.
It performs amazingly. It's actually not that far behind in focusing speed than the Z8, so it's pretty damn good for that. But in the hand, it was just woeful. And they do make a ZFC, which is their crop sensor version. Yeah. And I thought, well, that might be interesting. I'll have a look at that. And then I thought, what are the lenses that you can put with it? And there was nothing. There was literally some really crappy choices. And I just thought, this is such a missed opportunity for Nikon, that they've got an audience that is continually wanting to go down towards Fuji, towards these smaller crop sensors.
OM system, yep.
Yeah. Why are they not expanding that range? They're making a second version of a 24-70 2.8 for something that was only released a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Surely they could have invested that time in their DX range of lenses to complement that ZFC. It's just a
Do you have any insight on that, Jim? Do you have any knowledge as to why they're not perhaps focusing on the crop stuff, on the DX options?
No, I've got nothing on that. The only thing I thought was that maybe the, like, why they re-released that lens was just that they not rushed it to market, but pushed it a bit faster than maybe what they wanted it. You know, it didn't have all the features that they wanted. They wanted the internal zoom, and they maybe weren't ready. So they kind of pushed the other one, got it out there for a few years, and then had then time to really dial in this next one. So,
yeah.
I mean, the 24-70 is awesome, but the Mark One version, have you used it?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it. I've used it for not long after they released it, I think. And it performs flawlessly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great that it's a drop in weight. That's fabulous. But I just thought, of all the lenses we're sort of waiting for these new mirrorless, this was a time to catch up in some of the other areas that they're well behind.
Yeah. It is interesting because...
8 years old now.
Sorry. Oh, it's 8 years old now.
Yeah, which is which is older than you think, really.
Wow. I didn't think it was that old.
What are you doing, Greg?
It wasn't me, man. It wasn't me. It was Sam. Look, she looks beauty. It's interesting because I know... Lately on the Random Show, in the last couple of months, we've talked about a lot of new lens releases, and Nikon's been really quiet on that front. You know, we've seen a lot of third-party stuff coming through, and we'll talk about some of that in the news section. But Nikon's sort of been a bit quiet about it, and I wonder if they're, you know, we're sort of on the cusp of them going down a path of we've now got a new lens roadmap. We're serious. We're going to introduce some new lenses and for DX series. System, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in that space. But while we're on the topic, should we jump to some news? Jim, the jingle. Do the jingle.
I don't have the jingle. You've got the jingle, don't you, Greg?
I don't have the jingle. I don't even know what the jingle is. All right, it's the news. Let me bring up some screens and we'll get started on the news, everybody. Let's share the screen. I know what I'm doing. I'm a professional.
While we're waiting for Greg, we've got Rick Nelson saying, we all want quality and less weight, still waiting for a 1 kilo Sigma 16-600 2.8. Yeah.
Oof. That's a lot.
Hey, if we'd buy it.
Yeah.
Sign me up. What do you got,
Greg? Okay. Let's jump on the news. So Rico formally announced, we had a rumor that came out probably a month or two ago about the GR4. They slipped out a quiet little rumor about it, or a little teaser about it, when Fujifilm dropped either the XC5 or the X-Half. It was one or the other. And Rico Pentax put out a teaser. Well, now it's been formally announced that the GR4 is ready to be pre-ordered. Already they're saying there are stock issues for the next 12 months. Again, this is a rumor site, so, you know, yeah. I don't know how much faith you want to put in that piece of news, but we have talked about Rico releasing the GR models. In fact, we talked about it on Thursday last week, that the GR3 was proved to be popular, just as the GR2 was, mm-hmm. And especially with the new versions, because they released the one with different filtering system and then ones with a different fixed lens focal distance, but you couldn't get any of them, or at least not in Australia. It was really hard to get them in, and the stock delays were huge, but they had something like 7 different SKUs for what is essentially the one camera. Granted, there's one with a different focal length, but it just really baffled me that a brand was promoting so many different SKUs when they couldn't fulfill stock on any of them. Mm. And it was almost like they needed to sort of dial back on the excessive variations of the same camera and just focus on getting the core product into people's hands. And already we're seeing here that the GR4 is likely to be out of stock. They're saying that the demand is huge. This could be marketing speak from the brand. We don't really know what the reality of it all is. But stores are already taking pre-orders here in Australia. And I've spoken about the GR series before. It's certainly a camera that I've always been interested in. But of course it doesn't have a Fujifilm badge on it. So, you know, no. I have standards, Jim. I have standards. No, I don't. Not at all. Let's move on to the next bit of news. We'll jump onto this one. This is to do with Hasselblad. We mentioned this last week, but Hasselblad, last week it was a rumor that they were releasing a new medium format 100 megapixel sensor camera. And they've now confirmed that. They've come out with a teaser. And there's also been some leaked images. I don't know if we've seen it. No, that's the old one. There's also, on some rumor sites, there's been some leaked images of what it looks like, because there's people out in the wild testing it and all that sort of stuff that you usually get. But a new version of the X2D 100C Mark II, which will be, you know, retail for about $54,000 Australian dollars. So it won't really, I don't know what it costs. Or where do you even buy Hasselblads? Like, do they sell them at camera stores?
I've got no idea. I've never seen one for sale.
It's like spotting a unicorn, isn't it? It's kind of like you never really see them in the wild. So where are people buying them from?
Yeah. I saw one out there, the other day.
Yeah.
But it was on a shoot and it was just this guy walking around with one.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he a dick?
No, he was really nice.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. All right, moving along. Some news for... Nikon, this isn't exclusive to Nikon. A lot of the brands are having to readjust yet again their prices due to the changing, ever-changing American tariff situation. Mm-hmm. As you said, Sam, you were impacted only recently with your book getting shipped out. Nikon, I think Fujifilm as well, have said that there will be further price increases as a result of the changing economic climate, especially in America. And Nikon... isn't shielded from that in any way, like anyone else. When I saw this article, when I was grabbing news articles for tonight's show, it really made me wonder what sort of an impact, is there a measurable impact that someone will come back and say, this is how these changes negatively impacted camera sales and lens sales and people progressing in their photography, like whether there's that sort of trickle down effect of that. Be interesting to see down the track what people see from this and learn from this situation. But it's incredibly frustrating, and it's not good for brands, you know. And unfortunately, I've seen in forums and conversations that people are having online about this stuff, there's a really solid American base there who truly believe that these brands should absorb the cost and not pass it on to customers. And I've seen comments like that about camera gear. I've seen it about video game gear, especially. There's a lot of people saying, oh, I don't know why Nintendo can't just absorb this cost. They're a big company. Surely they can just take it on. Why do customers have to pay for it? And, you know, granted, often it's American customers that are complaining about it. It's just an interesting scenario to be in.
Yeah, and to a point they can, but if they do it wrong, then they potentially disappear.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's very true.
That's the other option that, yeah, they absorb and then maybe they're gone in 5 years.
Yeah, and they can't. It's not sustainable, is it?
Or then they've got to really put prices up and it really hurts because they haven't just crept them up. They've gone up 50% in like 2 years or something because they held on.
Yeah. So. Yeah, post-COVID. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so and be also interesting to know if the brands are suffering, like if they've got measurable, you know, data on the impact it's having, you know, whether it's caused sales slumps, loss of consumer confidence, all those sorts of things. I guess we'll know down the track.
Rick's just said, definitely I've heard some camera stores in Canada getting double hit as some of their shipments come through the US.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's pretty full on, isn't it? And you're right, Jim. If you're on the if you're a smaller brand and you're on the fringe of just making enough money to get by, and all of a sudden you get hit with this, and you have to put your price up, and your customers aren't happy, it like you said, it could mean the end of your company. It could mean that you've just got to you can't absorb it, and you can't expect your customers to pay for it.
No, or like they're refusing to. Yeah, no one wants to. I don't want to pay more, but
yeah.
We might have to make it work.
Yeah. And then, you know, should all of this tariff stuff disappear or it settles, you know, will brands respond in kind? Let's say this all the tariff thing gets shut down for some reason, because if, you know, it's come on and off a couple of times since he's announced them, you know, whether the brands will go, okay, well, that's fine, that's fair, we can drop our prices again, or whether that's just the new norm.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be interesting to see. What else? Leica news for anyone that likes Leica. Try saying that five times after a few beers. There's a rumor that there's a new M11. It's the V camera, and it's coming with a digital electronic viewfinder. So not your traditional rangefinder style of Leica, but they're putting in a 0.5-inch EVF, 5.76 million pixels, where there's a 0.76 magnification. A couple of other new features on it. Again, this is a rumor, but there's been leaks from a couple of different sources that have sort of said this is on the horizon. And that is yet another camera that will cost you $15,600 Australian dollars. So just so you're aware of that one.
Yeah.
Full frame BSI image sensor, backside illuminated sensor with the triple resolution, so you can crop how many megapixels you want to capture. What else we got going on? We just talked about the Nikon 24-70. That's been officially announced. The 2.8 Mark II lens. Some sites have some handy comparisons between that and the original. There is a weight saving. I imagine
it's a fair bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a couple of hundred grams. I can't remember where I saw it. It was on one of the rumor sites. Here we go, comparing. Let's have a look at this quickly. That's still up there. Here we go. Here's some comparisons. So, the original was 805 grams, the new one's 675. So that's a huge saving. It's gone from a stepping motor to a new, I can't believe they called it this, a Silky Swift VCM, an SS VCM. That's amazing. Nano crystal coatings, Arneo coatings, which were on all Nikon lenses, fluoride coatings. We're getting one called a mesoamorphous coat, whatever that means. And
been looking for that.
Have you? That's on top of my list. Yeah. And of course, as Sam alluded to, internal zoom function versus an external, extending.
That's something that's definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, no, I agree, Sam. I think, you know, and it's a modern update. It's what we would hope from modern zooms of this sort of nature. You know, maybe not the bigger ones, longer ones, but definitely these kind of workhorse lenses.
I was actually surprised when they made it. And it wasn't that because from memory, the old F mount was an internal zoom.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Quite a bit smaller too.
30 mil smaller, that's decent size.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair drop, which is good. So as I was alluding to earlier, you know, we are seeing more brands sort of remake their Mark IIs or Mark IIIs and just constantly chop weight off it, which is great to see.
Mm.
So, yeah. What else is being announced? Also announced, the new TT for Nikon, new TT Artisan 14mm f2.8. Did we talk about this last week, Jim?
I don't know. We talked about a few of those.
Yeah, there's so many lens coming out now. From.
Mm.
Yeah. But this is a cheap one, $196. This is US dollars, so
yeah.
Do the math. So that's about $350, yeah?
Yeah.
Australian. Yeah, compact little fast prime, full-frame prime, which is pretty cool.
Autofocus?
I don't know that it is auto. Usually they have AF on them if it's auto.
Okay.
No, I don't think it is. It's not a leading point on.
So it'll sort of pair with the Rokinon or Samyang versions that are already out there.
Yeah, and they've been out there for ages. We talked about those when Greg Carrick was on a couple of weeks ago, because he one of the first wide lenses I think he picked up was the Samyang 12mm that they made for every mount. They made that for Fujifilm as well, and he's shot with that before.
I think I've got their 14mm 1.4.
Oh, yeah. And
I use that just for Astro.
Yeah.
Because
it
used to do better than even the Nikon 14 to 24 F mount for Astro. Only for Astro. Right.
Yep. Yeah, 1.4 is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
On and such it's a wide
still,
lens.
It was still really manageable cost.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep. And I guess, you know, that's the great thing about these third-party lenses, you know, all of these brands, TT Artisans and what was the other one we were talking about the other day? They've all just left my mind. Anyway, there's a lot of smaller third-party brands making really cheap, affordable, but excellent optics that are great, especially for niche. So like Lauer, Venus Optics Lauer, they make a lot of niche lenses for Astro, for
Macro.
Architecture, Macro. Tilt shift. They did the world's first tilt shift zoom lens. I think that was last year they announced that. So it's good. These niche companies are filling these little pockets of needs for, you know, fairly targeted audience. But there's people out there that are asking for this sort of gear, and these brands are listening, which is great. What's next? New Godox strobe announced. This is the AD400 Pro Bi-Light lens. It's for Canon. Having a go at Canon.
So
the article's having a go at Canon for dropping the ball on the lighting and flash systems,
which is fair.
It is fair.
Both brands.
I would say, Nikon's in the same, and probably most of the brands are in the same boat.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because I remember, is it Nissan? Not the car company, but the flash company. Yeah. They used to make Fujifilm's flash, and they just put a Fuji badge on their product, basically. But it was exactly the same as what they were selling as a third-party option.
It's a bit cheeky.
Yeah, but I think a few brands did that, where they, you know, they outsourced it to someone else because it was sort of out of the optics.
Yeah.
You know, if you find a company that's tooled up to make flash systems and they've got all the tech, well, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
So that's a big pump and light.
Mm,
let's jump to a little bit of good news for Sony here. Sony A1 Mark II, full frame. Beast that it is, workhorse for professionals. It wins the 2025 EISA Awards for Best Camera of the Year. Congratulations, Sony. You finally done something right.
What's the ESA Awards?
That's like ISA. the The ISA awards have been announced. Let's see what the ISA awards are, Jim. If it loads. No, it won't.
No.
Okay. It's like an industry standard kind of thing, you know, like they do all the different awards each year. That's all I know.
Okay.
But Sony won something. So, yeah. You know, bully for them. What else we got? This is another rumor that Sigma are releasing 135mm f1.4 and it will come out in a couple of weeks. Well, it'll be announced in a couple of weeks. They call it the world's best bokeh king. Or bokeh, yeah, however you say it.
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
Well, yeah, I had a Sigma 135 and I didn't like it. Yeah, it was a 1.8, but maybe it'd be better. They were just very low contrast.
Oh, okay.
I've got the Nikon 135 1.8, the Plenar, and it's extraordinary. Oh,
yeah, I bet.
It is a stunning, it's got to be up there with one of my favorite ever lenses of all time.
I could never get 135 to work for me. It was always one step too close. The 105, I love.
I love it for portrait work. It's no good, like if you're doing weddings and you're in the bridal suite standing on a chair trying to get a bridal portrait, the 85's the one for that. But I just love this. And then I thought, I always shoot with a 7200 a lot during the ceremony and during the reception, and I thought this could be, this even steps down in weight.
Thought,
perfect.
And just a question for you, Sam, is it often that you're spotted at weddings standing on chairs? I'm just curious about that approach.
I do a lot of standing on chairs at receptions and everywhere, actually. Yeah.
Why not? Why not indeed?
I take off my shoes.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you've got manners. You've got standards.
I wouldn't do that.
I have been housebred.
Yeah, very true. What do we got here? Another little bit of news. Wanda has announced another Kickstarter, their Rogue V2 Sling, which has been flooding my social media. Gosh, they go hard on social media.
Looks like it's working.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So they had a goal for 15,000 US. They've already hit 82 when I last looked at it. So yet again, so I think the last one, which was the remake of their bag, one of their bags, they had a goal of, you know, a few hundred thousand and they hit $13 million in funding. And, you know, and we've talked about this before, but they're a brand that loves using Kickstarter. They started that way. And I think they see it as a means of giving back to their, because they've got quite a fan following now. Wanted and Peak. Oh, no, we're talking about Peak Design, weren't we? It was the tripod that came out. But the Peak and Wanted often use Kickstarter as a platform for launching new products, even though they're well-established brands now. Which is a really interesting approach and kind of clever, you know. Clever way to raise money for it. And then that's it for the news.
One more.
The case one. Sorry, Sam. This is one of Sam's requests. Case Australia, who I'd never heard of. I've never heard of this brand. Have you heard of them?
No. I started using their filters, their magnetic filters, and they're reasonable. They're not as good as the Nissi's by a long shot, particularly for colour management. But this is one of their first delves into an autofocus lens.
Yeah.
It's made for both Nikon Z and Sony E-mount. Yep. It's already available for sale. They had it at the Creators Conference thing in Sydney a month ago.
Oh, FrameFest?
FrameFest. Yeah. FrameFest. And I was hoping to test it out against the Nikon 85 1.2.
Yep.
And I managed to get an 85 1.2 from Nikon a week ago, and I've been playing with it for the last week, but it's just the weight. I can't get over the weight.
Yeah.
And the 85 1.2 is 1160 grams versus this one, which is exactly half that weight.
Wow.
For only losing a third of a stop. Now, if you click on the description, you'll get the actual weight down there.
Yep. 580 grams.
Yeah.
So for a third of a stop, I just couldn't justify. Oh, and it's more than four times more expensive.
Yeah, this is, I'm assuming this is an Aussie dollar. Oh, yes, it's case Australia. So it's down to $1,000 at the moment.
Versus over 4,000 for the Nikon. Yeah. So I just, no matter how much I love that Nikon.
Did you get to test it?
Yeah. Yeah,
like doing back to backs or anything?
No.
Have you? You haven't got the case one yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
No, it's on the list of once I get through the book tour and all of that.
Yep.
Once all of those finances come back in and finish, start paying off this book loan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. It is interesting, isn't it? This is Nissi released a couple of years ago. They released a Nissi Star lens. For a range of
that's
different
terrible,
mounts.
Supposedly.
Yeah, apparently it is. But, you know, hats off to them for being brave and having a crack anyway.
This has actually had fabulous reviews of people that have been comparing it one-on-one with the person who I watched was a guy who lives in Asia, but he shoots both Nikon and Sony.
Yeah.
And he was using the Sony version to compare it against the Sony equivalent, and in all of his tests this one came out by far better.
Yeah,
and he was just like, this is awesome.
Yep.
So he just said the bokeh has a really interesting character. It's just it's like the old 58 1.4 that Nikon made. It just has a lot of character to the lens. That's what I believe he described it as. So I thought, if it's something like that, I know I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
And Nikon haven't made, they made a 1.8, but they haven't done anything back. They had an old 1.4 in the F mount, but they've gone for that newer, let's take a third of the stop off, make an incredible lens, but at $4,000.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
It's just... you just can't justify it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of money.
Yeah. That's a lot of books. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that's been the news. Jingle.
All right. Jim. Fancy jingle. Yep. Just pretend it happened.
All right. Jim said so. Jim, do you want to catch up on the chat while we catch our breath?
Yeah. There's been a lot of chat going on. Some stuff that stood out to me before. Paul Henderson took my new OM3 to Calder Park on the weekend with the 40 to 152.8, and it performed really well, especially Pro Cap. Great small system, maybe even better than Fuji.
How dare you?
And then Justin said that OM3 did focus well for sports, maybe even better than Fuji.
Oh, so, go to hell. Sounds that's like a chat's agreeing. Not even a real person.
The chat's agreeing. And then what else do we got? Paul again. With all this gear getting more expensive, I might have to resort to using all my perfectly adequate old stuff, but then I would have to admit that I'm the limiting factor, not the gear.
Yeah, it's a sad day when you realize that you have to just stick with the gear that you've already spent thousands of dollars on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible day.
Tough
that's
life.
I'm going to stay in bed today, day, and think about myself.
You always sell it though.
It's a first world problem.
It is a first world problem.
Absolutely.
Very true, Sam. Thank you for the perspective. What else, Jim?
I think that's about mostly about it. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Rick did also say, is it me or has TD Artisan really stepped up their game? But yeah, it seems like they've been dropping some interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've been going for a while now because I remember people in the Fuji group saying, oh, I just got this TT Artisan. And often the lenses that they brought out were the exact focal distance and aperture as the Fuji version. They're just offering like a cheaper version of it. But they always had good construction and good optics. And now they're probably just getting more airtime as well because, like Sam said, you know, some of these first party lenses are just out of reach for most people. You know, spending up to $4,000 on a lens is a huge investment. And if someone's offering one that's, you know, comparatively close for half the price, a third of the price, or in this case, a quarter of the price with the case one, well, yeah, maybe that's worth considering and going for it. It'd be interesting to see whether, you know, once Canon truly open up their full frame arm out, you know, what will happen there? How many brands are just ready, you know?
Yeah, surely.
Ready to go, oh, well, we've got this, you know, we've been sitting on it for 3 years kind of thing.
And I think Bruce is going to get this made and put on a shirt, I reckon.
What's that?
I love Lauer.
Oh, he comes, yeah.
That'll be his new shirt for BFOP.
Yeah. We'll get you that one, Brucey. We'll send it out to you, mate. But that has been the news, folks. And there's so many tabs open here, I don't know what I'm looking at. Might be time to do a bit of an image review. Yeah, should we look at some of your photos, Sam? See what you've been up to?
Not recently, but yeah, this has been from my Great Ocean road trips, because my life has revolved around a publisher and book tours and teaching and not enough photography lately.
Yep.
But that's going to change very soon.
When you are hitting the road, once your books arrive, will you be shooting as you go?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Absolutely.
You've got to get content for book two.
Well, there is a second book coming next year, which is just for like iPhone point and shoot photographers, a much more scaled down version of the same book.
That's so cool.
It's just not very portable, the current book, for people who just want really a guide to the region rather than a photography Bible.
No, it's clever. It's, you know, you're catering to multiple markets. I think that's really clever. Let's check out some of your images, Sam. Talk to us about each one and let us know what it's about.
So this is one of my favorite spots called Artillery Rocks. This has a lot of really strange geological features with something they call cannonball concentrations, something like that. And it looks like a massive cannonballs or big rugby balls sitting on top of a pedestal. It's just phenomenal, all the different geological stuff that's in that particular area of just like maybe 400 meter stretch.
Yep.
And I was there shooting at sunrise, pointing about 90 degrees to your left from where the image is taken there at sunrise. And I just literally turned around and I saw this monstrous storm approaching and it was just being lit up from below from the sunrise.
Yeah.
I mean, I got absolutely drenched, but far out was it worth it. It's just incredible.
Yeah. It's a beautiful shot.
It is a beautiful shot. And the way that the storm is kind of channeling you into the image, and these two, the left and the bottom, sort of the channels in the rocks lead you to the center of the frame as well. It's beautifully composed, Sam. Wonderful. Let's jump to the next one. Is this the same location?
No, this is a place called Boggley Creek, which is still quite close to Lawn. And it has a number of really unique rock striations across it, but it just happened that particular time that the tide was just right where the water was rushing in through these holes. Yeah. And I was just playing with different shutter speeds to see what effects I could get with how much water was in there and how much was streaming over the side of those rocks there.
Yeah. And you can see it. If you go in a bit closer, you can see here.
Yeah.
The water rushing over the top.
And we just got really lucky with the sunrise that whilst it was above the horizon, it was just being penned in by all these clouds. So, it worked out that well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you using a filter with these?
Most of them, I haven't got the data right with me here, but almost always I have, if the sun's above the horizon, I'll have either a 3 or 6 stop ND on.
Yep.
Because it's wide angle, I've been trying to move away from using a polarizer when you've got enough of the sky, because you can get those really weird discolorations when you're using an ultra wide angle. Yeah. But sometimes I will, just to take some of the sheen off some of the rocks in the foreground, or if I really want to see down into the rock pools.
Yep.
So I just play around with it to how much polarization I get for any particular image if I'm going to use it. But I'm also getting, usually my Nissi gives me about 2 stops of light that I lose from the circular polarizer. So if the circular polarizer was on, I'm losing that plus whatever the ND filter is.
Yeah, okay. So you got to account for that.
Yeah. So even if you don't use any of the polarization, what a lot of people don't understand is that you still lose that light. So
yeah, still dropping 2 stops.
You drop if it's 2 stops when it's full polarization, it's still 2 stops if there's 0 polarization.
Right.
So yeah.
Cool. Next one coming along.
This one's Cathedral Rocks.
Yep.
I was just playing again here with shutter speeds, trying to see for some of my teaching what gave me this flowing effect and how many seconds. And it's taken it down to get that sort of flowing effect, you need a shutter speed of between 0.5 second and 2 to 3 seconds, depending on the volume of water, your focal length, and how close you are to the water.
Yeah. Let me just zoom in again, because that water effect is just mesmerizing.
Yeah. It's like a painting.
It is, isn't it?
Your
eye just travels across the frame, you know? That's amazing. Between sort of 0.5 second and 2 seconds, 3 seconds, depending on the flow.
And your focal length and how close you are.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yep.
All of those affect.
Yep. Next one. Oh, wow.
This is one of my favorite locations there.
Yeah, where's this?
This is Hopetoun Falls.
Okay.
This is very popular, and you definitely want to avoid being there around 3 o'clock on an afternoon, because it's usually chockers from about 10 till 3.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So try to go outside those hours on a weekend or school holidays, unless it's like the winter school holidays, which is ironically when it's the best. But national parks have actually done a really great job, because the best viewing positions are actually on the viewing platform, surprisingly.
Oh, wow.
It's like a decent sized viewing platform. And if you get the right angle, it's just a beautiful waterfall. And for the book, I jumped over the railing and trudged all the way up to the base of the falls.
Yeah.
But the views aren't better from up there. Like, I really think, surprising that national parks have done the perfect location for this. Just love it. This will be a three image stack that I've done, one for the water, one to get the lowest ISO throughout the image, and one to these ferns that are in the foreground to get them frozen. I've used a faster shutter speed, but because of the low light, I had to bump the ISO.
Yeah.
So I didn't want that ISO throughout the entire image. So I just painted only the bits where we had moving ferns, used those, just then pop them together in Photoshop with some layers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's amazing. You'll have to show me how to do that one day. I have no idea how to do that in Photoshop.
One thing, people always say, oh, you don't need that long for, I think this is about a, for the water is about 6 to 7, 6 or 8 seconds.
Yep.
For the exposure. And people go, oh, you don't need that long. And they're correct for the waterfall, because a waterfall flows over exactly the same areas. So your waterfall, you might need 0.5 second if that, to get that waterfall looking exactly like it is.
Yeah.
But to get the stream to have those really lovely, that smooth appearance, you need about 10 times the shutter speed that you're using for the waterfall.
Yep. And again, just the water effects, they're just so compelling to look at.
But then look at
those. They draw your eye in and
look how sharp they are. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Let me go back to the next one, Sam. Oh, filters. What sort of filters do you think you would have used on this shot?
Definitely when I'm doing the water, that 6 second, there would have been a three stop plus a circular polarizer.
Okay.
If there's more light, I'll put on the six stop instead of the three stop.
Yep. When we interviewed Brett Wood, he's also a landscape photographer, a couple of weeks ago, he was, you know, he was promoting the use of polarizers to pull out the greens.
Oh, yeah. Images.
And we can see it here. It's just there. Yeah, they're just popping.
I give a presentation where I show two exact photos from this waterfall, and they've been edited identically. They were photographed within seconds, and all I've done is remove the circular polarizer.
Yep.
And
just to show the difference.
Just to show the contrast and the color, the changes in saturation. It's not just the reflections, which definitely makes a difference.
Yeah.
But you don't realize the amount of saturation and contrast you're losing due to the reflections on the foliage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a masterful shot, Sam.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
That's cool. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
That's actually taken from the same platform, same waterfall.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
That's just gorgeous.
Different focal length.
I love this log that's dropped here.
Oh, yeah. And that's the great thing about the Otways. You're always getting trees falling. So every time you go back, it's different. So you've always got something new to shoot.
Yeah, that's very true. Oh, that's wonderful. Let's go to the next one.
This is Johanna Beach. And it was just, I'd never seen these rock formations and they're quite different from anything else in the region. And just that little, the reflection I was getting, it was one of the few times where I've been watching the weather forecast and watching the clouds and just, it literally, it said 100%, but it was going to have a gap on the horizon in the west of that high cloud. Now, there was not 100% cloud, but that fire sky effect was just phenomenal. It was one of the best sunsets I've ever seen.
Yeah. And the way it's reflecting off that little rock
that
pool.
Or
that little puddle on top of those rocks is,
And just further up from this spot is a small, you wouldn't really call it a waterfall, but it's like a miniature waterfall on the beach, right close to where the waves are, just that you can use as a different composition that I've got for different images.
Yep.
But I actually saw this image on a famous, someone has taken this image and had it reviewed by a famous British YouTuber.
Mm-hmm. Your image?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't claim it was theirs. They had it down as from me, but someone said, I saw your image on...
they didn't reach out to you to see if you were okay for them to use it?
Yeah.
Wow. But
someone was reviewing my photo and I had never put it up on there to be reviewed. I'm like, how did he even get it?
Yeah, wow. It's a bit odd.
I was just... I mean, luckily it got a favourable comment.
But it would have been trouble if it hadn't.
Well, he said, I'm not quite sure the horizon's straight, but then he zoomed in and he found out, it is straight. It's just an optical illusion with the
waves on the left.
Mm.
No, on the right-hand side where you see that sloping downhill, that combines,
Because your eye gets led down that slope. Yeah. Stunning photo. That's unbelievable that someone's used it. I mean, we've heard of people having their images taken and people claiming them as theirs, but to actually, you know, use it and accept that it's not theirs and say this belongs to Sam Olson, but not actually contact Sam Olson, it's just a bit cheeky, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if he did it or if it was somebody else
submitted it in.
And said it was my work. It was just odd when someone said, they reviewed your photo. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So,
Just a couple of quick comments from Lisa Leach, who's currently in WA visiting family and friends.
That's the
word. Cannonball concretions.
Yeah, that's the one.
That sounds made up.
No, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to Google that. And also from Rick here, very beautiful image there. Thanks, Rick. Was a few minutes ago, so I'm not sure which one, but they're all beautiful images, Sam.
Yeah.
Let's jump to the next one.
This is Lawn Pier.
Oh, yeah.
Again, yep. This is actually at sunset, but because of the storm clouds, I was actually going somewhere else, and then I was driving past this, and I went, holy shit, have to stop, got to take this image straight away. And I didn't even bother getting my tripod, my ND filters out at all until I grabbed a few shots. And so I grabbed about 20 or so, and then I got out all the other crap. But the ones that I'd taken at the very beginning were still my favorites.
Yeah.
And
I love that incidental photography that happens sometimes when you're out and about doing something. It's not what you intended to go out and shoot, but you saw it. Your eye, you know, it caught your eye and you went, actually, I can frame that. I can make something out of that.
If you don't do it, you know you'll regret it.
Yeah.
When you see light like that, you just can't.
Yeah.
You can't walk away from a storm cell like that.
No, it's huge.
And I think that whole area, that's what makes this area so special, like from Torquay all the way through Lawn and maybe even to, maybe just past Lawn, that sort of area. They're just so great for storm activity.
Yeah. Yep. And let's jump to your lucky last.
This is just above that position there. This is in Lawn. This is Teddy's Lookout.
Yep.
And there was actually roadworks going
amazing.
On the Great Ocean Road. That's what that green light you can see down below. Light. That's a traffic light for roadwork.
Oh. Yeah, because they set up those temporary ones, don't they? So it goes down to one lane,
Yep. And so there was, for the sky, there was 33 images that have been stacked together.
Whoa. That's incredible.
And they're literally taken like every, like that was, I think, a 15-second exposure. So there's just literally shutter closes, reopens again for another 15 seconds and just keeps on going until you've got 30-odd images. Yeah. And the idea is to be able to reduce the noise because that would have been at, I think, 6400 ISO.
Right, yeah.
And to get the detail out of the Milky Way. So to get that, you really need that. And that green color is just some of the air glow.
Yeah.
That you sometimes
it goes from orange on the left over to green on the right.
That was just an accident, that I will say. The car lights and that was about 6 frames, I think, because the cars weren't going through at their normal speed because of the roadworks.
Yeah.
I couldn't get the normal, what I was expecting to get when I got there because of the roadworks.
Yeah.
And I did screw up because I was trying to run this plus a star trails at a spot a couple of, like 100 meters below.
Yeah.
So I was running back and forth between the two camera setups. And this one here, I forgot.
With dodgy knees.
I didn't double check the damn focus was at affinity. And so... I didn't get a image at really that blue hour, which would have been better to get some better detail in this foreground.
Yeah.
But it's the best of what I could make with the images I had.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's amazing. Very cool, Sam. Thank you so much for sharing those with us. Some absolutely stunners in there. They're all stunners, to be fair. Great. Let me jump to something else I wanted to share with you guys. I was going to show some of my images, but really they're not worth it. After seeing Sam's, I just feel embarrassed.
I want to see some of yours.
No, you don't. No,
yes, I do.
Hang on. We're going to talk about Andrew Chapman's book first. For those of you who may remember, a few weeks ago we why have I still got that happening? What's going on there? Why aren't we in the middle, Jim?
Sorry, I thought you were reading up the book.
No, I was, but I can't find it at the moment. A few weeks ago, we had Andrew Chapman join us. Andrew is a career photographer. He was a photojournalist, Australian photojournalist, and he told his story about surviving a major organ transplant, but documenting everything.
Oh,
and
yes.
Then now he's
remember that.
Taken on a whole bunch of transplant procedures he's documented. To help families understand and to help raise awareness for organ donation. He works alongside one of the leading organ donation charities, I guess you'd call it, or institutions. And he did mention that he's got a book coming up. Now, it's the Ballarat International Photo Biennale. Is that right? Did I say that right? Thank you, Jim. Thank you. I don't quite have that Bendigo twang that you've got. Sorry. But his book is being launched at the Biennale in October, and it's gone live. And I just wanted to share it with you because it's called Fill the Frame, and eventually I'll work out how this computer works, and I'll actually show you guys the book. Let's pop it up here. Here we go. Fill the Frame. It's done by 10 Bag Press, and it's basically covering his whole lifetime as a photographer. So, we often talk about legacies and what would be your legacy be as a photographer. And I think Andrew has well and truly ticked those boxes, and he's putting it all together in a book that's going to be launched at the Biennale, the Ballarat thing, which is great. You know, we're going to get him on in a couple of weeks, I think just prior to the launch. He's joining us again to have a chat about the book. So we'll cover it in more detail there, but just wanted to acknowledge that his book, Fill the Frame by Andrew Chapman, is out. It's certainly not his first book. He's done other books, and they're down the bottom here where he has done these solo or participated with someone else. So he does have other books, but this one is about celebrating his whole journey as a photographer and a photojournalist, which is amazing. So, you know, congratulations, Andrew. As Sam knows, it's a huge deal and a huge amount of work to get a book published. And this one doesn't have the biblical proportions that Sam's does, and we'll have a look at that in just a moment. But regardless, amazing achievement from an amazing photographer, and really great to see, and wish him all the best at the launch, at the Biennale.
That image of the bikes are fabulous.
Yeah.
He's got some amazing cracking stuff in there, you know, past Australian prime ministers here. I mean, look at the quality of this, these, you know, incidental portraits. Yeah. There's just something magical about them, something really special. It's like he's not even in the room, you know, and he's documenting these moments, which is really impressive.
Bob Hawke?
It is Bob Hawke. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's photographed lots of politicians and events in the city and around all over Australia. There's a couple more here that we can look at. Is that Sting? That's Sting, isn't it? That's the police. It is. It's the police with the police.
Wow.
That photo on the left, it's actually Sting and the police, the band. Really cool. But just amazing moments, you know, that, like, how was he there? How did this happen? How was he there with a camera? You know, it's really quite impressive. Anyway, we're going to cover his book in more detail in the future, but congratulations, Andrew. That's a huge achievement, and you should be very, very proud. The other thing that's, as I mentioned, the Biennale is on at the moment, and the book is launching at the book fair, which actually has its own page on the Biennale website. There's a book fair on Saturday, the 11th of October, where they'll be selling a whole bunch of different photo books from different creators, and Andrew's is on there, Fill the Frame. Documentary photographer Andrew Chapman has been turning up with his camera for more than half a century for sure. Fill the Frame is a photo book celebrating his remarkable life's work. So that's pretty cool.
Mm.
Speaking of the Biennale, let's turn that off. Have you ever been to one, Sam? Have you ever been to the Ballarat event?
No, I'd never even heard of it until you guys interviewed someone about it. So I'd actually like to go one year.
I think you should. I think you should work towards that. It's a huge event. You know, we often talk about BFOP here because we're big fans of the Bright Festival of Photography. It's getting late. Greggy's losing his words. It's already happening, Jim. We often talk about that, but the Ballarat International Photo Biennale is huge. And it is an international event, and they attract a lot of international guests, speakers, exhibitions, that sort of thing. And basically, the whole of Ballarat becomes involved in this, and cafes and certain shops and stores will have mini galleries set up on their premises. little note here from Nick Fletcher. I went last weekend and it was brilliant. Yeah, I saw your photos on socials, Nick. They're amazing. Looked like you had a great time and certainly saw a lot. So it's a whole, you know, couple of months. It goes from August to October, I think. I'm going to try and get up there at some stage to see it and check it out. Jim, have you ever been to it before?
No, I haven't. No. But I think we need to get over and have a look.
Might need to organise a road trip.
If I can get accommodation, I might see if I can do it on my way down to Melbourne for the book tour.
Yeah. Oh, there's heaps of places around Ballarat and in Ballarat to stay. Jim's got a spare room. He's not far away. I think we need to organise a road trip, Jim.
Yeah, sounds good.
Justin could be designated driver. I'll train over. Yeah. We'll go from there.
Sounds good.
It's settled. Justin, if you're listening, we've got plans.
We're going to Ballarat.
We're going to Ballarat.
Justin and I are going to Ballarat in a few weeks for a shoot.
Cool.
Maybe we'll head over a little bit early and check out.
Yeah, I think it's well worth it. Very good. What else have we got? I want to talk about what's in the box in a minute. I will share just a few of my images because I got asked today. So basically this week and last week, Nick Fletcher and Matt Crummins, who are the godfathers of BFOP, have had me working like a dog, dog, Jim, doing interviews. So I've been interviewing every BFOP workshop instructor just so that when you go to book one of their workshops for BFOP, the bookings aren't open yet. No one panic. It's soon, but not yet. There's a little audio recording of me and Justin interviewing these workshop instructors, so you get a little bit more about who they are and what their workshops are about. And, of course, Justin pissed off to New Zealand and left me with the whole job on my own.
He does that.
doesn't he? He just disappeared. Yeah. Just disappeared. No planning, just gone. Poof. Yeah. I just lost my train of thought. That's really scary.
You have been interviewing people for BFOP.
Thank you. Interviewing people for BFOP. And someone asked me today, because I always ask them, you know, what do you shoot and what are you known for and how long have you been doing that? And they said, what about you? Are you still a photographer? And I go, yeah, I take photos sometimes. But the truth of it all is that I've been in quite a creative funk photographically. I've found it really challenging to get out with my camera over the last few months. I'm in a bit of a better headspace. I've been out a couple of times and maybe it's seasonal. I've often, you know, written articles about the seasonal impacts on creatives. I haven't been taking many photos at all. You know, I bought the macro rig. I still haven't tested it or had a crack at it. I've just found it really hard to get into the headspace. But, you know, and it happens. But I got my XE5, the new Fuji film, which came out, which I'm very, very pleased with. And I've taken it out a couple of times to just get a feel for it. It's almost identical to the XE4. It's faster focusing. It's got a higher megapixel count. It's just a better overall performer. I mean, granted, the XE4 is about 4 years old, 5 years old now, I think. I've been getting out and testing it. It's helping me. I know that gear shouldn't be what inspires creativity, but sometimes it just gives you a little nudge. You know, like when you buy a new piece of glass or a new camera, you know, sometimes it just gives you that little nudge, which is not why I bought it. But I'm pleased to say that I have been out and started to sort of get back in the swing of some street photography. So I will share some photos with everyone.
Maybe your funk, Greg, is because you bought another Fuji camera instead of
camera. Don't go there. You know that that's just bullshit. You know that that's bullshit, don't you?
Maybe that's why. Could have got a real camera and then you'd be happy.
A real camera? Wow. You're sitting in the back on the drive to Ballarat.
I'll drive myself.
Oh, whatever. So I went out. I live in inner city in Melbourne. Not in Melbourne, but in one of the inner city suburbs of South Yarra. A lot of interesting characters, lots of street art, lots of kind of grungy kind of locations, I guess you'd call them. So I just went for a wander on one of the sunny days we've had recently. That always helps my my creativity. If the weather's fine, then I feel really inspired and connected.
I love the framing of this.
Yeah, it's a spot I've used a few times, Sam. I kind of tend to when I'm trying to get back into it, I tend to revisit old spots, which might be my downfall, but
You know, go for what works, maybe. Just
that's to, exactly yeah, right.
Warm back into it.
Yeah, that's right. Very, very well said, Jim. Thank you. Yeah, so just sort of playing around with some street shots, getting some dirty looks from people, getting not intentionally getting in people's faces, but sometimes I do. Now, I have to, I won't publish photographs of people who are clearly are annoyed that I'm taking a photo. I just don't. It's not my style. This guy was holding his hand up to his face from back in the lights, and I was out of his view. It was the sun that was in his eyes, not me. I promise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with these shots, what I've been looking at is sort of incorporating a lot of this sort of, you know, this branding and signage that we see. And so I've kind of been trying to incorporate that into some of the work I'm doing at the moment.
I like the thing on the far right.
What was that? This thing?
Yeah.
The jumping in, yeah.
That's really compelling.
Yeah, it's a busy scene. And you've got that arrow at the top. I was trying to use that to sort of lead the eye to the left to the guy. And then you've got the coming soon. You've got the beautiful wrought iron work of the thing above the street casting a shadow. Yeah, like I said, it was just playing.
Is that a bird in the sky?
Yeah, it's a pigeon.
Flying rat.
This is at the back of Chapel Street.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of nice mix of old and new. And again, I'm sort of playing around with signage. Like this whole thing is just covered in signage, and then you've got Coles down here and that bit there. Yeah. There's another one from that, just a different angle, a bit further along.
Mm-hmm.
Little flower I saw. And again, just using signage. Just to add some character to it.
Now I understand why you like Tokyo. It's a far more, I think it's going to be a far more photogenic street scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was saying to someone the other day, you know, you could be in Tokyo and you could look down and you'll see, you know, the road, but they'll have this really cool, you know, they call them manhole covers, the circular ones, but they decorate them. They have themes. They have Pokemon ones and Gundam ones. And, you know, it's just the road, but it's got this really cool artistic thing just in the middle of the road that everyone's walking over and people drive over, but it's there. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Nick said branding and signs are super interesting because they set the decade. It's the thing you notice most in all the photos.
Yeah, it's very true. Thanks, Nick. That's a very good point. I was trying to sort of analyze that, and I couldn't find what I found interesting about it, but I think you've just nailed it, mate. And of course, Nick does a lot of street photography too. And he recently, when he put up some images from the Biennale over the weekend, he also put a bunch of his street shots up, which was amazing to look at. A comment here from Bruce, a bit of an essay, but I'll read it anyway. Thanks, Bruce. The interesting thing about photographing street in countries, you cannot read the signs. It becomes more about the graphic nature of what's in front of you because you can ignore the writing. That's very true. And actually, on some of my trips to Japan, especially Tokyo, I was really similar sort of focus, making sure I got as much signage in because signage in Japan is just next level. You've been, Jim. Have you been to Japan at all, Sam?
No, that's next year's trip.
Oh, gorgeous.
For 2 months.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, 2 months. But I've only got, 14 days in Tokyo.
Only 14 days in Tokyo.
That's more than I've been in two trips.
Staying right near Shinjuku Station.
Oh, shut up. I'm going to kick you off the show now. That's great. That's amazing. 2 months. God, imagine what you could do with 2 months in Japan.
Starting with snow monkeys.
Yeah.
So hopefully there'll still be snow on the ground.
When are you going?
Even if there isn't, there's so much to look at.
Yeah, you should have snow. Hopefully.
Depends how far north you go.
The snow monkeys are all in one spot. They're northwest of Tokyo.
Yeah. Yep. Months, that's a dream come true for me to be able to spend that amount of time. I've only ever spent, I think the most I spent was 10 days on my trip when I went to Osaka and Hiroshima. If you can get down to Hiroshima, get on a bullet train.
Oh, definitely. I'm down there for four
definitely go to Miyajima, which is the island off.
Yep. Definitely going
Hiroshima,
there.
Kyoto. Like you can just, you know, even in 2 months, you won't scratch the surface on anything. There's just so much to see and do, and photograph. It's a photography feast.
And the anal plan everything. Part of my personality has loved the planning.
Oh yeah,
I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
spent months planning it already.
Good, cool. Yeah, it's half the fun, isn't it?
Oh, I think they even the said food. That.
Oh, yeah, the food.
The food's going to be amazing. 2 months.
Yeah. I love ramen and sushi.
I remember going out my first night in Japan. I was staying in Shibuya, right near the Scramble, just around the corner from the Scramble Crossing, and I got in late from my flight. I got the train stopped at Shibuya. The Tokyo Express, I think. Narita Express from the airport to Shibuya came out, and it was, I didn't realize this, but it was a public holiday and there was more people than I've ever seen in my life combined. And so I quickly ran to the hotel, checked in, dumped my bag, grabbed my camera and went out. And I didn't come back until like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
But along the way, I found a ramen place that was open in the middle of the night. It's a lot of them often are. And there was nothing more surreal than sitting in Tokyo in the middle of Shibuya, eating a bowl of ramen while the world just goes around you. It's just, I've got goosebumps. I love it so much. And I'm so jealous, but I'm really happy for you.
Can't wait.
Very cool. Should we go to what's in the box?
Why not?
Yeah. Is it still in the box today, Greg? Or is it?
It is still in the box. Yeah. No.
Oh, so it only arrived today.
This one came today. Sender. Samantha Olsen Photography. Wow, I wonder what that could be.
I wonder.
I'm so terrible at acting.
Is it a Fujifilm?
Well, we can only hope, can't we? Now, Sam has given me instructions to be very careful opening this. So, Sam, do you want to just give us a quick rundown of the book and what's involved again?
Sure. I would have loved to actually do a little bit more about the history just before we get on to a little bit more about the book. But
sure.
A lot of people don't realise that the Great Ocean Road is the world's largest war memorial. And it was used when veterans returned from World War One to give them something meaningful to return to, so to give them work. And the fact that it was outdoors, it was really impactful for me as a veteran, hearing some of their stories of why the government had chosen to particularly put veterans on this project, because they'd come back from digging trenches and the horror that was World War One, which is, in all fairness, probably the worst war we've gone through. Yeah. In terms of the bombardment of artillery in particular, and the living conditions that they went through.
Yeah.
And whilst every veteran has a different story of what they went through in their overseas service, we all come back with similar issues. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest thing to getting past that is when you're trying to reintegrate into society, having a meaningful employment. And particularly being outdoors helps a lot of veterans. And for me, landscape photography was that opportunity to employ the practice of mindfulness and doing something I love. But because you're out in nature, you can hear the water, you can hear the sound of the animals or the trees rustling, and that focuses your mind on exactly what you're doing, rather than what might internally be happening. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of veterans, landscape photography in particular is a really healing thing for them, because they don't often like crowds. And so things like street photography don't often go down well, particularly initially anyway. So landscape photography is a really good healing therapeutic practice for a lot of veterans. This was the start for me, and being able to have that history, linking back to that history of the Great Ocean Road and how it was created, was really meaningful.
Yep. And so I guess for I just want to comment, Sam. Sorry, just in that respect, the book is almost a bit of an homage to those that went before you who were service people.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a beautiful full circle for you to fulfill.
Yeah, I can't imagine the things that they went through. And like, yep. I obviously had my own story, but in the end, it doesn't matter. We all come home with a lot of the same issues, no matter what experience you've gone through. And the hardest thing is reintegrating back into society after you've been in a warlike environment.
I can't imagine.
And this is really helpful, being able to reach back to the past for that.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's wonderful. And, you know, we've followed your journey for some time now, and we're incredibly proud of the progress you've made and that you got this absolute monument of a book out into the world. You know, you should be so incredibly proud of yourself for what you've achieved. This here, people, is A Photographer's Guide to the Great Ocean Road and Otways by our very own Samantha Olsen. It is a hefty book.
It looks
big. As Sam said earlier on, this book doesn't just cover the nice places to visit, the good car parks to park at. It covers everything from photography skills, all photography skills, what kind of gear you need to go on some of these shoots, you know, how many steps you need to climb in case you've got some mobility issues. The level of thought and detail that has gone into this, Sam, is just phenomenal. It's staggering, actually. Here's an example, guys. I'm sorry, I know it's hard to see, but this one up here, it's talking about split point lookout. It gives a rating as to the quality. It gives the walking distance in meters, talks about the difficulty of the walk, whether it's easy or not, whether towing vehicles can go in there, whether animals are able to go in. So if you have a dog, dogs. Like Sam does.
Just dogs.
Just dogs, yep. And whether you can or can't fly a drone. And then it's got how to get there. It's got some sample shots that are Sam's own work. It talks about the walk. It talks about the weather and what to consider about the tides. You have just thought of absolutely everything. You know, full credit to you. And I love the fact that there's so many of your images in here as well. And it's color-coded by area, I believe. Is that right, Sam?
Yep. So there's five different locations: Torquay, Lawn, Apollo Bay, Port Campbell, and Warrnambool.
Oof. And that's how thick it is. There's my head.
It looks big.
It's a beast. This is a book that, you know, if you are going to take photography, landscape photography seriously, and you want to dive into the Great Ocean Road, which is one of the world's most beautiful areas, then you've now got a companion. You can't take Sam with you, but you can certainly take a book.
Well, actually, you can take me with you.
Oh, all right.
All you got to do is turn up to one of my workshops.
Oh, there. There's that too. That too.
So I run three of those a year.
But, once again, huge well done from all of us. That's just incredible. And we're so glad that we got to be here to witness your journey and the success of it. And we just, we're really proud of you, Sam. It's really cool. Very, very cool. You know, often photographers and creatives think about either, you know, going into the exhibition as like a top of their bucket list thing to do with their career or publish a book. You know, the fact that you've done this, and I know how hard this was for you to get out, and you're already planning book two, tells me a lot about your endurance and strength of character. And, I look forward to seeing more of this sort of good stuff to come. But thank you for sending me a copy of the book. I feel really privileged.
That was actually just a thanks for all your support and keeping my spirits high when things were looking really grim.
Yeah, and I know.
Finding it really tough to see how I was going to get this out, but luckily I was able to get a loan because it came out over 50 grand just for the printing. So it was a big financial burden, but it was something that after you've done four and a half years of work on something, it was just too hard to leave it as an ebook.
Yeah.
It would have been criminal.
Yeah.
But it is available as an ebook for those of you that are perhaps in the US, and I don't know if you're aware of this, Australia Post and a lot of their courier companies have stopped shipping to the US now. As of August 22 or 29 or something.
Yeah.
Because of the uncertainty for customers with tariffs. Because I was shipping books everywhere and I had a couple of clients in the US, I got a notification both from Australia Post. Luckily, I'd got them in the post in time, but they had said that they are stopping shipping for the moment until they can gain clarity on the tariffs.
Well, that's pretty big.
I don't think we've noticed anything with DHL yet for our US customers. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that book, because of its weight, was $75 to send to the States, and that was the very cheapest, very cheapest I could find.
Yeah. Shipping costs just a lot of money.
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't get over it. But
I've seen a couple of businesses, you know, just on socials, businesses are putting up posts saying we're no longer shipping to the US. You know, apologizing to their US clients, but they just can't absorb the cost. And, you know, it's going to be hurting them for sure.
Well, I would have thought if, like, say, for example, Lucky Strap sent something to a client in the US, it would be the same as if we got a package here sent to us and they hadn't collected the GST, that they would tax the client.
Yeah, I've seen that happen before. I remember years ago when, you know, internet shopping was still in its infancy and you would send something to someone or have something sent and then it got stuck somewhere because you had to pay the tax or the custom duties or whatever it was. Fortunately, those things seem to be mostly a thing of the past. But it's crazy. It's crazy what's going on, and it's really hard to see through all the, you know, all of the noise about it to see how it's actually going to affect things like our craft and you know, Lucky Strap sending products overseas and you with the book. It's you know, I think at the end of the day, it's going to be the small businesses that hurt the most.
I don't know how people offer free shipping. I just don't understand how they can do it.
Yeah, I guess they probably inflate the price of the product and hope you don't notice, you know. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, so many places are offering free shipping. We're in the middle of renovating, so we've had a bunch of stuff, so much stuff, furniture, new kitchen appliances, tiles, paint samples, so much stuff delivered to us, and a lot of it they don't charge. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're paying a premium at the top. But yeah, very cool. What are we looking at for time? It's currently 8:58. I think we're well on the way to wrapping up here, guys. If anyone is interested in learning more about your book, Sam, where should they go? Where's the best place to find out?
My website. Oh, my website has all the information, and even better if you
put it in the chat. Yep.
If you buy it off me, you won't. I won't lose 40% of the retail price to the retailer.
Oh, there you go.
So,
let me just bring it up here.
That would be awesome if they bought it directly from me. And I'll have new stock in just over a couple of weeks.
Cool. You'll be hanging out for that.
Well, it's caused a lot of dramas because. I didn't understand that concrete had a weight limit. And
Concrete?
Yeah, so my dad said to me, where are you going to store these books? And I said, oh, just in my townhouse. And he said, whereabouts? And I said, oh, upstairs. And he said, you can't put them upstairs. That'll go fall through the floor.
Imagine if that happened.
Because he worked out it's going to be 6 ton of books arrives to me, the other portion of going to the publisher. And I said, well, I'll put it downstairs. It's a concrete underneath. It should be fine. He said, you can't put a pallet of books on there. It's just too heavy. You can't put 1.5 ton in that section.
Yep.
It'll go through the concrete. And I'm like, it's concrete, surely. He said, no, with residential stuff where they put foam inserts or something
right
in for the cheaper builds, that it won't take that weight. So yeah, it's been going to have to be, I've had to find a different storage solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I need to get them out to all the suppliers in Melbourne as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, Bruce here we go. Said, I've seen a building damage from too much paper stacked on the second story.
Mm.
Wow.
I guess you just take it for granted, don't you?
Well, you move a box, you know, a box of books up at a time and it doesn't seem so bad, but.
No.
Well, each box is 14 and a half kilos and that's for four books.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that is a lot. Something's going on with my internet. I can't load your website, but for we'll pop it in the show notes. But it's Samantha Olson Photography. Can you bring it up
on .au?
Yep, .com.au.
Have you spelt my last name correctly? Well, that's usually what happens.
O-H-L-S-E-N.
Yep, that's it.
I know what I'm doing. Sam?
Well, it was working earlier today.
I don't know what's going on. It won't load. Have you had any luck, Jim?
Yeah, I'll put the link in the chat.
Yeah, thank you. As Sam said, guys, if you're interested, please just go and have a look. Just support Sam. Just have a look at the site, check out the book, and if you're keen, the link is there.
It'll give me some Google love.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I'm glad that that chapter is coming to a close. If you'll pardon the pun on your book. And I look forward to what you're going to do next, which is great.
I'd really love to see your photos when you actually take a trip out there next. Now that you've got the book, I want to see some of your photos displayed after you've had a look to check through the book and see where you might want to go.
All right.
Sounds like a good idea.
It does indeed. Challenge accepted. I just need a car. But then we'll be fine.
Hire cars are for.
Yeah, that's true. I don't own a car because it's cheaper to Uber. I live in the city.
Yeah, that makes sense.
More expensive to own a car than to drive it for me. So, wasn't worth it. All right. Well, look, I think we've come to a bit of a natural end of the show. We've done what's in the box. Jim, did you have any news outstanding or anything that's happening in your world at the moment?
No, not yet. Nothing that I can release just yet, but working on a couple of things.
Yeah, I want to see your website when it's ready. Yeah. I'm really keen to see your work.
It's almost
ready.
We'll show that in all its glory when he's ready.
Yeah, I was up till about 2 a.m. last night working on it, so I don't know
I want to see how much Justin was taking your work down.
Or how many images of his I've stolen and put on my new website.
Whatever works, Jim.
Well, I wouldn't know the difference.
I don't think Justin's keeping count.
That was funny. There was one image and it was a wedding Justin and I had shot together and I said, I don't know who shot this. I don't know. It was that long ago and I had to look at the data to know that it was me, thankfully.
Oh.
Who took the one jumping in the water? Was that Justin?
Yeah, that was Justin. Or no? Did you jump in the water, Jim?
Jumping in the water with the bridal party in the pool.
Yeah, he jumped in with his R5 too.
Oh, recently I took all the photos. Yeah, well, I took photo. Justin did video that one because we were just there as guests. So
you weren't stupid enough to jump in the water.
Oh, after I put my camera down, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
After.
Yeah. Very good.
Don't worry. I've been recommending all the camera clubs. I said, if your camera ever gets inundated with salt water, I said, I always carry two water bottles with me. One is designed specifically to tip water all over my camera gear in case it gets inundated by salt water, because I'm too lazy to put a bloody camera cover on most of the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've done it now twice with the Z8. I was naughty and I didn't even turn the damn camera off. Just wiped it over with the micro fiber cloth and just kept shooting. And it's been great. I just said, there's only thing one worse than water over the top of a camera, and it's salt water. So at least get rid of the salt water. You've got a chance. I mean, it does help that the Z8's like weather sealed.
Mm-hmm.
But even if your camera's not weather sealed, that's even worse because the salt's going to get further in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've learned now not to buy cameras from Justin or from Sam.
Yeah. Buyer beware.
Yeah.
That's an exclusive scoop from the Camera Life podcast. We've tracked you down.
I had my lug fall out.
A current affair.
I had my lug fall out of the side of my camera the other week. Mm-hmm.
Like the strap lug?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big problem on Z8s when they were launched.
That must have been my original one. I've got two. One of them it's happened to.
Yeah.
But so it's in with Nikon getting fixed.
Yeah, so they should. That's a pretty dodgy mistake.
Yeah. I was just lucky that I must have just picked the camera up and I had it really firm or something because it was wrapped around where the hand strap was.
Yep. They mustn't have tested their lugs like we test lucky straps.
No. Swinging the Leica.
Yeah.
Just a little comment here from Rick Nelson, who's my new best friend. Lugs don't fall out of Fuji. No, they don't. Rick, you're spot on there.
Yeah, but Fuji don't have full frame sensors either.
That happened. Yeah. Sorry? You don't need that. That's not important.
And they don't have any weight to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I need.
They glued on.
Shut up. They are not.
They may as well be.
Whatever. All right. I'm going to throw a tantrum and end the show now. But look, just before we roll the music and say our farewells, I do want to say a huge thank you to you, to Sam Olson. Thanks for joining us tonight and adding so much to the Random Photography Show. And once again, our heartfelt congratulations on the book. We saw the blood, sweat and tears that you put into getting this thing published, and you did it. And you should be incredibly proud. We are of you. But to everyone watching and listening along, whether you're watching with us live now or you're watching later, give Sam a little bit of love. Go check out the website, have a look at the book, and consider your next travel to Victoria to travel down the Great Ocean Road, one of the greatest scenic locations in the world.
And if you need a camera strap, you need to get them from Lucky Straps.
Exactly. But don't buy them for a Z8 because they'll just fall out anyway.
No, they won't because mine's attached to the bottom.
Oh, whatever.
I adapted mine.
I'm going to silence you in a minute. You can't keep contradicting me. I'm the boss. But in all seriousness, Sam, well done and thank you. Thanks for joining us tonight. And like I said, adding so much. And Jim, always good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Mm-hmm. We look forward to seeing what it is that you've been working on recently, and we'll have a bit of a reveal down the track for you. Yeah. What else is happening? Justin and Yelena are returning in the next few days, I believe. And from their travels in New Zealand. So no doubt we'll have a lot to talk about with Justin upon his return.
We'll probably have a whole episode of image review and then also what's in the boxes that have arrived at his house.
While he's been away. But also Yelena's been taking lots of photos. She's been shooting with the Q3, the Leica.
Yeah.
And she's been taking some smashing shots. So I reckon we should get Yelena on the show.
We should see these photos.
Yeah, we need to see what Yelena's been up to. But what else? Thursday we are being joined on our interview show by Jeff Cable, who is a world-renowned sporting photographer. He is part, I'm not sure if he still is, I assume he is. We'll find out more detail, but he's part of Team America, the Olympic team from the States. He's one of their official photographers. And he's joining us live on Thursday morning. So make sure you join for that. And speaking of which, please give tonight's episode a like. And if you're new here, welcome. We are the Camera Life podcast. And we do two live shows a week. And we go live because we want our community to be with us every step of the way. And as you can see from the chat, people are asking questions. They're commenting. They're talking to each other amongst themselves. And that's what we love about doing a live show. Every Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time is a Random Photography Show. And every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time is our live interview show where we interview a photographer from Australia or from abroad. And of course, we couldn't do anything that we do without our favorite and only sponsor, LuckyStraps.com. Head to LuckyStraps.com if you're looking for a premium handcrafted leather camera strap that Jim will actually, he will give it a kiss, of approval before he boxes it and sends it out to you. He won't really release it.
Yeah, maybe.
You never know. You don't know what he does with them, to be honest. That's taking That's taking a creepy tone, Greg. but if you're looking for a premium camera strap that will probably outlive your camera, then head to luckystraps.com. Yeah. We offer a wide range of camera straps in a wide range of colors, and also there's personalization options. So you can make it truly your own. But on that note, I think we'll play the music. And do you want to say some goodbyes to the chat, Jim?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it, everybody. I'm going to try and get the music right for the second time tonight.
Thanks, Paul.
We will see you all Thursday morning.
Night, everybody.
Cool. See you guys.